sahanavavatu, sahanavunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Let's chant 49 to 51. That's how we do that.
Okay.
That's what we're gonna just start from there again.
Savikalpasya lakshatve.
Savikalpasya lakshatve.
Lakshasya syada vasuta.
Lakshasya syada vasuta.
Nirvikalpasya lakshyatvam.
Nirvikalpasya lakshyatvam.
Nadrishtam nacha sambhavi.
Nadrishtam nacha sambhavi.
Let's chant that together, we practice it.
Vikalpo nirvikalpasya. Savikalpasya bhavet. Adye vyahatiranyatra navastama shrayadayaha.
Idam gunakriya jati.
Idam gunakriya jati.
Dravya sambandha vastushu.
Dravya sambandha vastushu.
Samantena svarupasya.
Samantena svarupasya.
Sarvam metariti shyatam.
Sarvam metariti shyatam.
So repeat after me for 49. Savikalpasya.
Savikalpasya.
Lakshyatve.
Lakshasya.
Lakshasya. Syat.
Syat.
Avastuta.
Avastuta.
Nirvikalpasya.
Nirvikalpasya.
Lakshyatvam.
Lakshyatvam.
Nadrishtam.
Nadrishtam.
Nachasampavi.
Nachasampavi.
Okay. Here, as an example of manana, of really questioning the validity of the vision of the Upanishads in one way or another is manana. Here the Vaisheshikas, the Nyaya Vaisheshikas, which is a school, another school of thought, they actually don't accept nirguna, anything is nirguna. In fact, for them, everything is that exists is experienced through our sense organs and then just through inference. These are the only two pramanas they accept. And so all of this is what is. And what that amounts to is whether you're talking about Ishwara, because they do have an Ishwara, what that means is this Ishwara must be saguna. It must have qualities. You know, it must have difference. It's called vikalpa. It can at least have difference in that everything that you experience, one thing is different from the other, is different from the other, is different from the other, is different from the other. But what makes for the idea of Brahman, they don't use the word Brahman, but the saguna substance, the dravya, which is saguna, which that we call Ishwara, is just because consciousness itself is considered a dravya, a substance. And that substance, which we call consciousness, pervades the entire creation for Ishwara. And then for the jiva, that substance that we call consciousness pervades everything, but there are many individual jivas. Each consciousness is individual based upon the given sukshma sharira. That's not exactly logical. The Sankhya has that same issue. I'm just telling you what it is in the Nyaya Vaisheshikas. So that means that since there is for them nothing that is free of guna, right? There's two things. A dravya, which is a substance, any substance is called a dravya. The dravya itself is going to, there's the eternal dravyas, like the five elements, and they are each one going to have a substance inherent in them. Like, for instance, just like fire has the substance, the guna of form in it. That's considered a guna, you know, a quality, or water, just like what we do in the Panchikarana, very, very simply. Water has the guna of taste in it. So what that means is every guna, every substance is independent. It has its own independent being, and it has gunas which attach to it. Some of the gunas are inherent, like, for instance, sound is inherent in akasha, or form is inherent in fire, those type of things. You can't separate them, but nevertheless, they are a guna. And the gunas are dependent totally on the substance, but the substance has no dependence whatsoever on the guna. But you can't have a guna or a quality by itself. It must inhere in the substance. And so this creation that we experience, from the most minute to the most pervasive, all of them have gunas, you know, or kriyas. Kriyas are actions. They could have gunas. They could have inherent actions or functions. They have inherent what we call a jati or what we call samanya. Like, for instance, that would be the general characteristic. Like, for all of us, humanity is the samanya, is the general. It's also called the jati. It's what is true to all of us. But then all of us also have what we call visheshas, particular qualities. So we see, even cat is a jati, right? Cats are a jati. And there are many cats within that jati, many numbers within that jati, and each one has different, can have different qualities, different visheshas that make it unique from the other cats, like that. So the situation then for this, there is no dravya, which is nirguna. Dravya, there is no nirguna substance that doesn't have any qualities, because it must have qualities to differentiate it from another substance. So that is also one of the qualities that any dravya or any substance will have. You can differentiate it from another. And that goes on endlessly. I talked about this a little bit a couple of days ago. It's an endless division. And it's endless division because every object has its own visheshas. And one of the visheshas, one of the qualities, is the quality of difference. This is different from that. And if you can't say that, then it's not different from that. It's the same thing. And so they go on and on, kind of dividing the universe up into these categories, these what we would call a substance, a dravya, and then the different types of guna, kriya, the qualities or the actions, etc., that adhere either permanently to the substance. There's some kind of some bandha that is not inherent, but most of them adhere into the substance and depend on the substance. So what this Vaisheshika is doing, this Nyaya Vaisheshika, this Purva Pakshi, he is trying to, with this verse, dismiss Vedanta. Vedanta. And he does this by making this kind of vikalpa, between savikalpa, this division between savikalpa and nirvikalpa. And he says like this, he's dismissing, trying to dismiss for the Vedanta in both savikalpa, means like Brahman with vikalpa, like saguna Brahman, and Brahman without vikalpa, like nirguna Brahman, non-dual nirguna Brahman. He wants to dismiss both sides, just to finish us off completely. So he says, when the lakshyatva, if you remember lakshyatva, the lakshya in terms of how do we know Brahman, we talked about bhaga, tyaga, lakshana, where you have to give about up the parts that are different and you're left with a non-dual conscious being. So Brahman is something that is not vacharta. It's not the immediate meaning of the word. You don't see Brahman. You know, you can't experience Brahman through your sense organs, nor can you experience Brahman through any of our means of knowledge, like inference, you know, inference or presumption or all of the means of knowledge we have at our available to us, because they all require guna. At least they all require guna, in some sort of guna, or some sort of kriya, or some sort of relationship, in order for us to even be able to objectify it. But then in our school, as at the, I don't like to call it a school, within Advaita Vedanta, if we accept that Brahman has guna, then it's subject to change. Right? Because there's more than one thing there. There's a substance which has quality. That's two. Right? Even if one inheres in the other, they still look at it as two. And so that means that Saguna Brahman, if we say that the what is being inferred or what is being implied by our teaching methodology in the end is Saguna Brahman, then your whole thing is totally ruined, because Saguna Brahman is mithya, according to the Vedantin. This is all mithya. Whether you say Ishvara, the Ishvara Maya Upadhi, or anything within it, time, space itself, it's all mithya. Upon analysis, it just falls apart. You can't establish anything here as having any type of substance whatsoever. And so if all of your teaching reveals Saguna Brahman, then there's no moksha for you, because Saguna Brahman is mithya, right? Like everything else. And mithya has no reality for you. In mithya, it has a dependent reality only. It has no reality of itself. So you've negated moksha for yourself if you're claiming savikalpa, Saguna Brahman. And then he says, and if you're claiming as the lakshya the thing that all of the Vedanta teaching is pointing to is Nirguna Brahman, then you're really in trouble. Because Nirguna Brahman, you have no means of knowledge for it. First of all, for the Vaisheshikas don't accept anything Nirguna. There's only Dravya, a substance, which has some of them have one inherent attribute and then other attributes also that will apply to it. But there is no such thing as Nirguna Brahman. But say you are positing a Nirguna Brahman. That's a Brahman that has no attributes. How are you going to know it? There's no guna, there's no vikalpa, there's no division. It's not, this is Brahman and this is not Brahman. There's nothing like that. There's no qualities or no things that you can have a subject-object relationship with, because your pramanas, the pramanas that you have, won't give you anything. And so he says, the lakshitva, if you look at Brahman as nirvikalpa, then what? Nadrishtam, it can't be seen. It means it can't be known. And also, it's not even a possibility. There's no way to get to it. You can't see it. There's also no way to even, from a Vaisheshika point of view, there's no way to even imagine it. Where is it? Because for them, everything has a substance. Every quality has a substance. And so that's their position. And so if you say the substance has no quality, or the substance itself is nirguna, then there's no way for you to even know about it. It's impossible. So how can you even be talking about it? That's their position. So then Vidyaranya has to answer this position. Okay. So repeat after me. Vikalpaha nirvikalpasya
nirvikalpasya
savikalpasya
savikalpasya
va bhavet
va bhavet
adye
adye
vyahatihi
vyahatihi
anyatra
anyatra
anavasta
anavasta
atmashreya
atmashreya
adyaha
adyaha.
So, Vidyaranya, this is kind of the first pass of an objection. As I said, I think we mentioned it last time we were on these verses. Often the first objection, or the first, what do you call, answer to an opponent, it means, we say opponent, that's not quite the right word, but when you're in a debate, there are two sides. So if two people are debating a certain darshana or the truth or the reality of a given darshana, here it's Advaita Vedanta versus the Vaisheshikas. So in that debate, the first thing is that you do is try to negate the person's, the darshana of the person and show that it itself is illogical and impossible. That's what he's trying to do. The first one, the Purvapakshi, he's trying to do that. He's trying to just wipe the Vedanta off the map. So then you say, oh, yeah, I made a mistake. Thanks so much. I'm going to become a Vaisheshika like you. Okay. That's kind of the thinking. Okay, so say he was able to successfully wipe Vedanta off the mat. Then we can call it quits right there, or that the Vedantin will want to learn more about Vaisheshika, the Vaisheshika and Nyaya, just to understand it, because his has been wiped out. You know? So why even go any further? It's not the truth. So let me hear what you have to say. Because since you've been able to negate what I have to say, let me hear what you have to say. But, you know, Vidyaranya is not accepting this position at all of this objector. For him, it doesn't show anything except his ignorance of Vedanta. That's what it shows. And so he decides to mess with this guy a little bit. Yeah, that's a modern way of saying it. So what he says is, vikalpaha is your vikalpa. Now there's two ways to take vikalpa. You can take it as an objection, or you can take it as a division. Like if you say sa vikalpa, it means it's with difference. It has differences. It has parts. It has visheshas. It has qualities. Another way to take vikalpa is that, and I'm going to kind of take it both ways, is that if something has a vikalpa, then it has gunas. It has attributes. You know, it has things that separate it from one thing from another, which in terms of this creation, maybe what we call vikalpa, difference, is the most important thing. That's what allows me to see this is different from this, is different from this, is different from this. And so vikalpa becomes a very broad word, right? Like if the qualities of the substance, if one substance has one particular guna, another substance and a quality, another substance has another quality, these two are different. If one substance has a function, one function, and another substance has another function, different. So vikalpa means difference, you know. We can also use the word vishesha. Like if I say we have what's called samanya, this samanyatvam, it means like cat for all cats. That's the jati or the samanya. That's what's same. But then the vishesha is all of the distinctions that each one of those members have. So that's called vishesha. Vikara, this vikalpa, I mean, is a little bit broader in that it means everything, you know. Within Saguna Brahman, the thing is that every single thing is differentiated from everything else. Or they would just be one. Just to really understand, say if I say something is niraguna, it has no qualities at all. Then how is there any difference? How is there any vikalpa? There can't be a vikalpa. That's the problem when you say nirvikalpa. There is no difference in it. There's no subject-object difference, no seer-seen difference. There's no substance with an attribute difference, like substance with a guna, or substance with a guna means an attribute, or a substance that has a kriya, has a particular function, or a substance, what do the other ones say, list here? Oh, sambandha, which means it has a different, that particular guna attaches to this substance, but not to this substance. It's called sambandha, different one type of sambandha. So he says here, so say we take vikalpa just in terms of difference. He asks this question, is the vikalpa something which is for, belongs to nirvikalpa, that which has no vikalpa, or difference, or does it belong to savikalpa, that which has a vikalpa? Now, the problem is, if you say, take the first one, Does the vikalpa, this idea of difference, belong to something which has no difference? That's a conflictual statement. Because something that has no vikalpa at all, you know, not even a substance different from a substance, or a substance different, you know, differentiated from the substance. If there's no vikalpa, if there's no difference at all, it's just nirguna, what is that? What is that vikalpa going to land on? Because it itself is nirvikalpa. So he says what he says, and so that's basically like saying there's nothing there. And so there's two ways that he answers this first one. He says in the first, adye vyahatihi, he says in this first one where you're saying that the vikalpa that belongs to something that has no vikalpa, then there's a conflict in the terminology because the thing that you're talking about has no vikalpa, and so how can a vikalpa belong to it? You've already said it has no vikalpa. So there's no way that vikalpa can belong to something that you've already said has no vikalpa. So that's out the window right there. You know, so you've just put, as the commentator says, you've kind of put your foot in your mouth there. You know, there's nothing more to say about that that's obviously not going to be true. But then he says, though, there's another problem. What if you say that there is vikalpa, like a difference, like an attribute or a kriya, an action or a category? There's that these type of what they call padarthas, these type of realities, real things. They're dependent, but they're still real. They're there. We experience them. Say if these type of vikalpas, differences belong to savikalpa, something that has attributes, right? Then what happens? Okay, then we have a problem because you're already saying the thing has an attribute and now you're adding on, it has its own vikaras, it's of its own division, vikalpa, and now you're adding a vikalpa onto that. So does something which is savikalpa by its nature, and this is the Vaisheshikas, does this savikalpa substance take on to itself all different gunas and kriyas and all of these things? Say we just look at gunas for now. Say you have something which by nature has vikalpas, it has like gunas or kriyas or things that are belong to it, savikalpa, and then this savikalpa substance, by its nature, it's savikalpa, it's going to take on different gunas that belong to it. So then the question is, how is that possible? How can that be? Because, and so what Vidyaranya is trying to do here is just throw him out the window, his whole philosophy out the window, which is exactly what the Purvapakshi tried to do, is to throw Advaita Vedanta out the window. Now, Vidyaranya is answering the Vaisheshikas. And it's an obvious answer for them. They have nothing. They don't have non-existent. They don't have non-existence in the way that we something that exists as non-existence. They don't have that at all, right? And they don't have anything that is free of guna. The guna, some of the gunas are inherent for the actual, like the five elements. They all have an inherent guna in terms of each one being this, what we call a sense object. Like I said, it would be hearing, it would be sound for akasha, that type of thing. So now you say, these things that have gunas, how can they take a guna on top of their savikalpa? They already have an inherent, they already have a guna. And now you're going to put a guna on top of that. So you have, say if you say, you have an object, say if this doesn't make sense, it's because it took me a while to get it myself. So say you have a substance, right, which is savikalpa. If you say it's savikalpa, that means inherent in that substance is a guna, is a quality. Okay. Now on this savikalpa substance, which is the reality, you know, you're going, the bottom line, this substance that is savikalpa, you're going to put another vikalpa on top of it. Because there's many attributes and kriyas and, you know, attributes and objects, different kinds of attributes, different types of gunas, different types of kriyas. So now this attribute is going to be added to it. Because no attribute, no quality can Vaisheshika can exist by itself. It must unite with a substance. And so, like even say color. Color is a guna. Color just doesn't float around by itself. It has to inhere in the substance, right? And then there can be other things like weight. Weight is a guna. It has to inhere in the substance. So this substance, say any given substance, already has an inherent guna. Okay? So it's what we call sadikalpa. And now we're going to put another guna on top of it, another quality on top of it. And so when Paramarthananda did some nice drawings for this, which I actually had to read about 10 times, because the drawings themselves were, took me long. But so I'm not going to do the whole thing, because there's actually, in establishing the relationship between a guna and savikulpa, it has five doshas. There are five different, completely different flaws that have to be overcome when we look at that possibility of adding a guna to something that already has a guna. So he names in here two. One is called atmashriya. The atmashriya is a defect, it's a guna. The other one is anavastha. So he says the doshas are like this. Anavastha. Let's see how he says this. He says, in the first, it's an impossibility, but in the other example, the savikulpas, yadikulpa and the savikulpas, there's two doshas that he names, anavastha and atmashriya dosha. He says adiyaha, because there's three more. There's five doshas, and each one of them creates an insoluble problem. And so there are five insoluble problems. And then having exposed the opponent to these five insoluble problems, then the opponent, if he understands what's being said, has to kind of whimper away. And his thing has now been ruined, so to speak. One other thing about this, in these debates in India, the debating between darshanas is not a joke. It's actually taken very seriously, and the two what we call opponents, or the two darshanas, when they get together to discuss, it's all for the sake of moksha. You know, so if they're serious people, they both have studied each other's darshana. They both have studied Advaita Vedanta, not to the degree that the one who's a Vedantin has studied, but they've studied it. And just like here, Vidyaranya has studied, you know, and knows what Vaisheshika say. And so when they get together, they are dismantling, not just to dismantle, it's just not for the fun of dismantling. It's when this darshana is looked at from the viewpoint of this darshana and their belief system, the Advaita Vedanta doesn't hold up for them. And when the Advaita Vedanta looks at the Vaisheshika from their standpoint, the Vaisheshika doesn't hold up for them. You know? And so when a debate comes to completion, where there's what we call all this Purvapaksha Siddhanta, what that means is technical terms, but important to be known. The Purvapaksha is the first Siddhanta. The Siddhanta is what the person believes, right? So the one who's the Vaisheshika, you know, is looking at what they believe the Vedantin is saying, and then raising an objection to their understanding of what Vedanta is saying. Okay? Now, that objection, either the Vedanta can answer that, or they can't, you know, or they can answer it in steps, and vice versa, right? And why bother? Well, if they're serious people, they're inquiring after moksha. All of the darshanas in India have a reason. They're not just a philosophical game, you know, where, oh, this is an interesting idea. Let's create like a whole, you know, philosophy out of this and see how that works out. You know, and then another philosopher, oh yeah, well, I want my philosophy to be like this, and I don't agree with this and that. And so there's all these various philosophies, but they don't go anywhere. They're not about moksha. They're not about freedom. They're not about ananda or fullness or being able to say, everything is now well with me. I am full. I am whole. I am complete. That's in the West, it's not about that. There's no moksha or anything like that. But in India, there is. And so all of these darshanas are aiming, even the Charvakas and the Jains, was the word that I'd forgotten. It was Jains, not Sikhs. It was Sikh is something else. They're the Jainas. They're a very ancient tradition, but none of these three, like the Bauder, the Jains, and the Charvakas really accept the Vedas as a pramana. But the Charvakas are completely atheistic, and the Jains have their own teachers and sampradaya that's coming down. It's an interesting, all based on really ahimsa. It's very interesting. And then the Bauder, the Buddhists also don't accept the Vedas, but they all accept moksha. And so what would moksha be like for the Charvakas? This is just a little aside. What would it be for the Charvakas, the atheists? How to have the happiest, most happy life here that you possibly can. That's what it's about. Because everyone's going to die. The only pramana really for them is perception. They don't even accept inference. This is it. And so how can we get the very most out of this world? And their basic answer is, follow Dharma and enjoy as much as you can. Because Dharma, just experientially, the adharma causes discord and pain. So following Dharma, create a life that has the maximum pleasure, the maximum enjoyment. That's the most you can do, you know. And so the Bauder, the Buddhists also, you know, they have the Ashtanga Marga. They have an eightfold path in order to gain that total absolute vairagya. A total, mature, absolute vairagya, dispassion, even toward dispassion toward the body and toward the sense organs and toward the mind, so that this mind itself and the experiences of the mind, the experience of the physical relaxation as you meditate, the experience of the mind's peace or happiness, all of that has to be vairagya. You have to just let everything go. So that what? So that you can just be whatever that reality is left over. After your sense organs and mind and thoughts and all of this is a total vairagya, there's no turning toward any of that, then you can have that nirvana where everything is as though what is like a still candle flame, non-dual from its own standpoint. They don't use that word. They use the word shunyata, that what is left is shunyata, means it is free of any type of duality, any type of nama-rupa. You'll talk very little about that because they don't use lakshana in terms of the words at all. You know, and so they just direct you toward a recognition as much as possible. But there's no words, there's no philosophy because Buddha doesn't believe in any, he doesn't have the Vedas. And so he uses an example. Like if you if you're shot with an arrow and there's an arrow in your leg, are you going to philosophize about the type of arrow it is and, you know, what type of bow could put the arrow so deeply into my leg and it's a new type of feathers I see. It's actually absolutely extraneous. All you need to do is have a means to pull the arrow out of your leg. That's it. These other things are not necessary. That's it. We can talk about that if we have time during this course. We can talk because Buddhism has some importance to us, as does Sankhya Yoga. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that in this Purvapaksha Siddhanta, when the Purvapakshi is giving an argument, that argument often is just to kind of negate the reality of the opponent. And so that's what the first questioner did. And now Vidyaranya is doing it back to him. And what he's going to show with these doshas, with these logical defects, is that you're saying all of this to me, but you don't have your own house in order. We accept for you there's no nirvikalpa, but you don't even know how to deal with savikalpa. And you say that the only reality that there is here is savikalpa. And yet your whole idea of something that has a guna, has an attribute, its relationship to other attributes, all of this is full of doshas. One of the doshas is what we call atmashriya dosha. I'll just give a couple of these because it's too much for me without a chart to hold it all in my head. Atmashriya dosha is, say, you have a substance called a dravya. You have a substance, and that substance has a particular guna. We'll call it guna one, something like that. Guna one. It has a particular attribute which is inherent in it. So that attribute really belongs to that substance. And now this substance, with guna one attribute, right, with the first attribute, it is going to take on another attribute. And now the question is that attribute which it's going to take on the same attribute or a different attribute? Because it has many attributes, it's going to take on the same one. Say it's going to take on the same attribute. That's a dosha, that's a defect, because that attribute is already there. So what do you say? This attribute, it's like, is going to be supported by the attribute that is already there. Right? And so the example they give for this is, say, for instance, you have a book on it sitting on a desk. Right? The book is supported by the desk. Right? But what if you have just a book? How can that book be sustained by that book? Same attribute. It's not two attributes, it's one attribute. So if the book is resting on the book, then that, how can the book be resting on itself? That's the problem. And so the attribute must be a second attribute. And then you can run into a dosha, a defect, because of that second attribute is different than the first attribute, and then that itself creates an anyonya, a mutual interdependence. And you can get down to, in the end, you get down to this situation. I know this doesn't make sense, but 3 more minutes. It does make sense, but you have to take it really slowly. And I'm still not good enough to do it as well as I'd like. But anyway, just to tell you, what ends up happening is you can't have the same attribute. That's not going to be a guna that is utilizing this savikalpa dravya, which already has a guna. It can't be the same one, because then it's not taking a guna. There's no relationship between the two. There's just one is dependent on the same one. So that doesn't make any sense. But then if it takes another one, there's something that happens, which I don't totally understand, called interdependence. So in the end, what has to happen is that the guna that the saguna substance uses has to be different than the one that's being added on to it. But then that somehow has to change, so these attributes go on changing in their relationship to each other until you get some sort of infinite regress. There's 5 of these mind-boggling doshas. But I think as I study them and looking at them, I see the doshas, I see these defects. He sees them very clearly and takes them for granted, Vidyaranya does. Because, I'll tell you why. Because everybody knows these terms. In Vedanta, we use these terms also, like the atmashriya dosha. Something can't rest on itself. It is itself, right? Or if we have what we call, the one that we used a lot, is the anavastha dosha. Anavastha dosha is infinite regress. It means for us, this is dependent on this, but that is dependent on that, and that is dependent on that, and that is dependent on that, and there's nowhere to stop. There's no place to stop. So it goes into an infinite regress. If you try to divide an object into parts, there's no end to the division. As long as it takes up time and is in time and space, you go into an infinite regress, because there's no end to the division as long as it takes up space. See what I mean? Even though it's a little tiny space, if it's divisible because it exists in space, then you haven't got to the bottom of things. It's impossible. That's what we mean by infinite regress. Even in terms of time. So infinite regress for us is something that is applied so often See, even in terms of time, if you say, try to divide up a moment, you try to define a moment in time. But when you analyze the moment in time, it will break down easily into two moments. Your moment's too big, right? But now you have those two moments, but as long as that moment takes up time, it's divisible. And so that division of time goes into an infinite regress. No way to establish it. You cannot get to the bottom of it. And so just with my using in terms of Vedanta, these two examples, are applied, and there's five different ones that we don't usually use. We use the Anavastha as our favorite one. Because it establishes mitya, you know. But what happens here by the application of these logical defects, what happens is that the savikalpa substance guna relationship can't be established. So he's only telling two. They're either subject to infinite regress, or when you think of one guna being added on to something that already has that same guna, that's not possible. So then the question comes in, what does it mean for it to have a guna? Is that it has no guna? This is the thing. If you say, what does it mean for a substance to have a guna? If it has no guna, and then it's taking on a guna, right? Then it's the one that has no guna is nirvikalpa. It's got no guna. You know, there's no attributes at all. That's nirvikalpa. So if it has no guna, now it has to take on a guna. But something that's nirvikalpa can't take on a guna. So these are the kind of things that he decided to use this vaisheshika, nyaya vaisheshika objection, just so that you can experience manana. So manana, this type of inquiry. When we get into the Brahma Sutras, which is the last text that is done, usually, you know, the first chapter is used to establish the Vedanta, all of the words that are being used in Vedanta, and all of the sentences, how you could take them to mean something else. That's all part of Shravana. But then from then on, it's looking at every darshana. And also, he can make up, as I recall, it's just objections. You know? All of these objections, like why shouldn't it be like this? The whole Brahma Sutras is establishing why no, it can't be like that. Just to take care of every possible objection that you might have, that it's humanly possible to think of. And then if you think of one, say you've studied enough to think of something, wow, and you say, wow, the Brahma Sutras missed this objection. And you have enough knowledge to say that, then it's your turn to write a book. And take care of that objection. See what I mean? So, and it's the job of every teacher in every era. In every era, but here we are in the modern era. What are our purva pakshas today? We have to look at those. That's the kind of the duty of the, because different realities we're experiencing. It's a different type of world. It's a different type of objections. So anyway. I'm going to leave it there, and maybe I'll bless you all with another class on it later when I'm better at it. Okay. It's hard for me to understand, really, really deeply understand these different darshanas, because you have to really think about to really try to understand what they're saying. You have to really understand what they're saying, even to understand Vidyaranya's objection to it. So you can't just fake it, so to speak. So here, let's look at this next one. Repeat after me. Idam guna kriya jati dravya sambandha vastushu samam tena swarupasya sarvam etad iti ishyatam. So he says, this problem, this what we call dosha, which is really the group of five that I was telling you about, there's the anavastha dosha, the atmashriya dosha, And there's one that shows the mutual dependency. There's another one that shows it's a split cyclical dependence. And then, of course, there's the one where it ends up you ended up saying that you're that nirvikalpa is there. Nirvikalpa is a huge dosha. They don't accept that at all, right? So that's the first one. So anyway, there's five of these doshas, and what he says is, you know, each one of these logical defects don't just apply to the gunas, to the qualities. He goes to guna, to the guna, gunas, to the kriyas. You can do exactly the same thing instead of looking at it as a guna. You look at it as a kriya. Does the kriya, does this action go on to the saguna dravya substance? Does it already have a kriya or it doesn't have a kriya? Either way, it doesn't work. Okay. The same problem, the same doshas are going to come up. What if you do jati? If you say jati is like humanness for all humans, is that jati there, inherent in the substance, or it is not there? If it is not there, inherent in it, then the way that we add that jati onto it is going to be a problem. So either way will be a problem. And then he says the sambandha, also the inherence. If something is inherent in something else and you have another inherent, so is it the inherence in there, or it isn't in there? If it's not in there, you know, then it doesn't belong. So how is you going to add something that's inherent to something that already has the same inherence? Or if it doesn't have the inherence, then it's free of that vikalpa. So anyway, these things don't belong to it. You know, and then you're adding it on, so they're not intrinsic to the vastu. So what he says is, it's no matter which of these padarthas, which vastu here means a padartha, these things are all considered as real. Guna, kriya, jati, dravya, sambandha, all of these are considered as real, but they all suffer from the same problem, that they suffer from the application of these five doshas that are a little hard to understand. And so he says, samam means the same. It's the same for all of these objects of reality. So he says, therefore, tena, therefore, what shall we do? In the commentary, the commentator says, he has the student ask to the Vidyaranya, to the teacher, is this your answer? Is this the best you can do? Because you've negated his stuff, but you haven't said anything about Vedanta. And so what he says, therefore, tena, swarupasya, sarvam etat, ishyatam, iti ishyatam. He says, you know, therefore, this being the condition that they're being suffering from, let all of these padarthas, all of these, the guna, kriya, etc., let all of these things belong to the swarupa. Belong to the swarupa means belong to Brahman, belong to the self. Let all of them belong to the nirguna Brahman. You know, and so that's his start. So let all of it. That's all you can do, because it has to belong somewhere. So let it belong to nirguna Brahman. Of course, if it belongs to nirguna Brahman, then all of this has to more or less be mitya. So we have to look at that. Okay. So we're going to do one more verse. Okay.
Vikalpa tada bhava bhyam.
Asamsprishtatma vastuni.
Vikalpitatva lakshyatva.
Vikalpitatva lakshyatva.
Sambandhadyastu kalpitaha.
Vikalpa. Tad abhava pyam.
Samshrishta.
Atma vastuni. Vikalpitatva.
Lakshyatva.
Sambandha adyaha.
Sambandha adyaha.
Tu kalpitaha.
tu kalpitaha.
What he says here is basically, and a lot more has to be said, but I can't do it and we can't spend time on it for the Vaisheshikas. But let me just, we'll have to trust Vidyaranya, and I can give you some reading to do if you would like. Okay, so here, what he says is, vikalpa, these divisions, you know, tad abhava, or the absence of them, sa vikalpa nirvikalpa. So let there be vikalpa, or the absence of vikalpa, so either vikalpa or tad abhava, the absence of that, bhyam, abhyam, puts it in the dual. So, samsrishta atma vastuni. The atma vastu. Vastu means what is actually here. Yourself. The atma. Yourself. Is asamsrishta. It is not touched in any way by any of these. Here, these two first. By vikalpa or not vikalpa. Something has a vikalpa or it doesn't have a vikalpa. From the standpoint of the atma, none of this is relevant in any way. It's not relevant in any way. And one more before I end it. Then he says in the second line, vikalpitattva, having a vikalpa, being with vikalpa, difference, or lakshyatva, or being something which needs to be applied, like when our whole teaching methodology has to do with lakshya, that which is implied, having dropped from tyagabhaga, bhagatyaga, having dropped off all of the differentiating things, what is left is one non-dual atma. But now, he says, this arguments about vikalpa, savikalpa, nirvikalpa, and whether it's savikalpa or nirvikalpa, these type of arguments, even that it's being, this knowledge is being the methodology by which this knowledge is gained, that we call through the lakshya, lakshyatva, this bhagatyaga lakshana, by that, or even all of these gunas, what is a sambandha? What is a relationship? What is a guna? What is an attribute? What is a kriya? How do all of these things, you know, relate? He says, well, the atma itself is asamsprishta. It's not touched by any of these things. All of these things are kalpita. Kalpita means imagined. These things have no, they're mithya, they're maya, they have no being at all. What he's saying is, it's like, and he in the commentary, say you're having a dream, right? You're having a dream, and in the dream, all of these debates are going on, and what is the substance? What is the substance versus the attribute? And how does this knowledge take place anyway? You know, what is the reality here? Is this dream nirvikalpa or savikalpa? You know, what is all of this? What are all of these attributes? How, what part do they play? All of this type of stuff. All of these are kalpitaha. How can you even take these debates seriously or have any meaning whatsoever from the standpoint of the atma? That's why when we're doing a guided meditation, one of the things often that we'll say is when you turn your attention just to yourself, and then just be yourself, right? Just be the conscious being that you are. From the standpoint just of your being, is there anything else happening? Is there anything else happening? Is there subject-object relationship? You know, are there gunas? Are there qualities? Are there any type of actions or inherent jobs, you know, functions that have to be done? Does Brahman have a relationship with something else? Does it have any type of what you call jati? Is there a jati for Brahman, like humanity for humans? What is Brahman's jati? Like where does Brahman fit in? What group does Brahman fit in? there's no group. There's nothing. There's only Brahman. And from Brahman, this is another thing that he's saying, from the standpoint of just conscious being, the Satchitatma, where is there knowledge or ignorance? From my standpoint, the standpoint of myself, say there's the vacharta, the immediate meaning of the words, which have to be dismissed, so that the laksharta, that which is remaining, is understood. Who's gaining this knowledge? Brahman? Is Brahman gaining this knowledge? Or does Brahman even have any idea about gaining this knowledge? Who is gaining the knowledge? Is the dream character? Is the character in Maya? This body, mind, sense organs, this mind, the sense organs, the means of knowledge that we utilize, the Bhagatyaga Lakshana, you know, Saguna Brahman, Nirguna Brahman. What, how, in any way, does that have anything to do with the self, with the Atma? Because with the Atma, none of these things are applicable at all. And so what that means is, within the dream, within the imagination, within this creation, we use words and have different types of means of knowledge that we use for gaining Atmajnanam, for gaining self-knowledge. We have all of these devices, and we have to account for the Panchikarana, the whole manifestation of the creation and everything in it. Why do we do that? Why do we do all of this, account for all of this, and use all of these means of knowledge, right? So that we can dismiss them, really? We establish this huge edifice here, this whole creation, only to recognize in the end that it's kalpita. That's only kalpita. Kalpita means it's mitya. It's maya. It's mitya. It has no being whatsoever other than the self. And the being, even when we say, from the standpoint of this creation, here this creation that we're experiencing, it has Brahman as its adhishtana, you know, as its support of what is actually here. What is that for Brahman? Does Brahman think I am the adhishtana of this creation? Brahman doesn't think anything. Nothing at all. It's like the clay of the pot. Does the clay think I am the adhishtana of this pot? For the clay, there is no pot. There's only nirguna Brahman, nirguna clay. See what I mean? So that's the first thing to understand, that we use words and all of these different teaching methodologies in order to make the student recognize that they belong, the body, mind, sense organs that they have misidentified themselves with is actually just part of the dream. It has no more reality than the entire dream, or no more reality than the entire imagination. That all of this really is totally dependent for itself on me, on Atma, on the self, on conscious being, Brahman. And all of its visheshas, all of its qualities, and all of the relationship, the jatis, and all of this type of thing, all of those only exist within Maya. You know? And so now, in terms of Maya, we ask, which has all of these gunas, and all of these kriyas, and all of these relationships, all of these things that the Vaisheshikas talk about, what do all of these have as their substance? From their own standpoint, they don't have any substance. They don't have any guna. Any analysis of any guna or substance or kriya goes into an infinite regress or one of these doshas. You can't find it. Upon analysis, you can't find it. And then even if you say substance and you just say the substance has gunas, you can't find the substance. He thinks this whole creation is what is real. This is it. This is the truth. And so let's find it. Let's find it somewhere. Let's find the substance. It all goes into every kind of conceivable dosha. You can't find a substance here. You can't find an attribute. You know, you see it, but when you analyze it, it disappears. That's the problem. You see it, you take it for granted, you analyze it, and then it can't stand. So he says, let's not bother. In a sense, let all of it belong to the Swarupa Atma. Swarupa means that to the truth of it all, to its own swarupa, to its own nature. But what is its nature? Not something divisible. Mm-hmm. Its own nature is Brahman. So let everything just belong to Brahman. Let it all have Brahman. Let it all be Brahman, you know. because upon analysis, the only thing that's ever left is Brahman. And from Brahman's own standpoint, the self's own standpoint, this isn't here anyway. That can be a little shocking to people. But you have to remember you have to remember this about that, though, is that as we've done in the Driktrisha, see or seeing differentiation, if you remove your eyes, say you don't have eyes, then no forms are there for you to experience. If you remove your sense of hearing, no sounds are there for you to experience. There's a total relationship between the hearer and the heard. They depend upon each other. You get rid of one, you get rid of the other. They're interdependent. And they also exist within Maya. So now say, this is part of the Viveka, calmly eliminate one after another. Eliminate all the, mentally, all of your five sense organs. What is your experience of the body or the world at that time? You don't have an experience of this world or of this body because you need your sense organs to experience it. Don't you? I'm not saying it's there or not there. I'm just saying that your experience of it is dependent upon having a means of knowledge, so that means of knowledge and the object of knowledge are dependent upon it. What if you have a sense organs and you have all of this world and this body, but, your mind is not functioning? Maybe we'll even put the mind in deep sleep. Then you don't even have an experience. Not only you don't have an experience at all of this world or of the body or of the prana or of anything, not even of the mind, you just have an experience of ajnanam, which is not really an experience you're going to comment about when you're in that experience because there's no subject-object relationship. So all of the, when we think of, just let it all rest on the self, and then you think, well, what do you mean the self doesn't know all of this? How will it know? How will it know? This universe is known, right? There's no knower. It is known because of the nature of consciousness, not because there's a knower-known relationship hanging out there somewhere. Where is it? It's within the Maya. The knower-known relationship, even from the standpoint of Ishvara, the sattva pervades the whole creation, right? That's what we say. So that allows that creation from its own standpoint to be as though known. But there's no knower. Right? The knowership is the knowership is really the knownness that creation enjoys, and we call that Ishvara because Brahman, the self-evident conscious being, is the adhishtana of that mithya creation. But when you start looking for a knower, there's no knower. The self certainly is not a knower. And everything that has this knower-known relationship exists only within the creation. And even then, you are attributing knowership to a means of knowledge. Like, what if instead of you saying, because I have eyes, I'm a seer? What if you said instead, these sense organs are instruments? They're not me. They are instruments that are used to form a thought a jnana vritti, a thought modification in my mind that we call a vritti. And that vritti is known. So the mind also is an instrument. It's an instrument that gathers all this data from the five sense organs and creates a thought modification, right? And there's different types of thoughts that are there, like the ahankar, problematic thought, and then the buddhi and all of these things. But these are all functions of the antakarana, functions of the mind. And how do we know that? Where's the knower? The knower is not there. The knower is the consciousness that allows that vritti to be known. And then my ahankara comes in and divides it all up as though there's a knower and a knowing and a known. There isn't. It's just the vritti and whatever's going on it, which is known, illumined by consciousness. And so consciousness is necessary as the adhishtana for this maya to be experienced in any way. Because as we'll see in the Kena Upanishad, the consciousness is the ear of the ear and the eye of the eye and all this. So it's beautiful what we'll be doing in the next text. But from the standpoint of consciousness, what is there? What is it doing? What is it knowing? There's no upadhi there. There's no instruments. There's no vritti. You know, there's no sattva. What is it doing? What is it knowing from its own standpoint? Nothing. I'm samsrishta means nothing touches me in any way. From my standpoint, there's nothing happening at all, zero. I am that I am, that's it. But why do I say, is that all? But it's now, it's not that that's all. It's because then your own nature is ananda. It's the very being from which this entire creation comes. It's absolutely everything that everybody seeks. That's why in a moment of happiness, you just close your eyes and don't want it to go away. Yeah. Because that's who you are. All the other types of vrittis and experiences, let's get this, we can make this better and make that better. Yeah. But not with yourself. With yourself, that's who you are, who you want to be, you know, and it doesn't require anything else. Everything else is really subservient to giving the mind that type of vritti, where it's not in any way conflicting, its attributes are in no way conflicting with my own nature, and then I feel everything's well with me. Like when I fulfill a desire, you have a shanta vritti. Everything's let it just last, but it won't last, but it'll last for longer. When I meditate, I'm just with myself. I don't want to come out. When you have a meditation, you're just absorbed in yourself, and it's time. You keep thinking. Sometimes when I'm in meditation, I think it all the time. Okay. Self does not need anything. It doesn't need anything. It's not a knower. It's just absolute free. It's the very self of the whole creation. So Vijayaranya says, just all of this is Maya. Recognize it as Maya, the problem goes away. Just let all of this belong to the Swarupa. You know, that makes it all Mithya. We'll see in the next verse. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Rupyo Namaha Harihi Om.